This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest, Glenn Wine, 92 years old, of Atwater, California. Speaking of Atwater, it's going to be a hopping place this week. You've heard me talk about the incredible Castle Air Museum a time or two. And this next week, on Wednesday, October 16th, the museum will be receiving one big new addition. At 1 o'clock on Wednesday, be there in Atwater, and you can see a plane that once carried Presidents Ronald Reagan and Bill Clinton as Air Force One. It is a Douglas VC-9C, and it's landing Wednesday at 1 o'clock at Castle Field with the reception on the tarmac to follow. Our guest today, Atwater's Glenn Wine, had a special addition to his family while he was still serving overseas with the Navy in World War II. What was it like to have that mail call and find out your son, your firstborn, had entered the world?
That was, well, my letter here would expose that, and I'm not going to read it to you.
Why not?
No.
You going to get too emotional?
No. But that was one of the happiest days of my life, of course. I realized that the wife had given birth to a son, and she was doing fine. So that was a big day. It's also, you can put two and two together. We were back in the States to pick up another load of boats. We were only been here for about a week. But it was at that point then that our son was conceived, and there were several others on the ship. We all had passed out the cigars and put up the notices.
So you're saying 9 months or so after you all were back home, there was a bit of a baby boom from your ship?
Bit of a baby boom.
That's great. When you knew that that he was in the world now, was that an extra reason to get through this and get back home?
Oh, I just wanted to get back home, period. However, it was wonderful. I mean, when I got home, he was 6 months old when I got back. But the main thing that we were trying to do was to get the war over.
What about the toll that some of this takes? As you're delivering troops or you're delivering tanks, did it start to weigh on you when you realized how many Americans were dying to try to win this war?
No. It was part of my thought process that I said it was always somebody else. I never really suffered thoughts in that regard.
Did you ever lose guys that you knew pretty well?
I mentioned the one Marine captain that he roomed with me aboard ship. We did have one man killed aboard ship. Once again, I said it would be very interesting to see what the statistics would show as to how many people were killed or injured by our own fire as there were by enemy fire. And I'm thinking primarily of the flak, which is what this man did, particularly at the end. We had so many ships, everyone firing up there at some bombers that may be going over. Whether they could hit them or not, they did probably didn't. I didn't even see him ever hit any of the bombers.
So this guy on your ship was killed by anti-aircraft fire from another American ship?
He was killed by flak, exploding shells. Yep. Up there. They came down and it hit him. He had a May West on, but it happened to hit him right in to go between there. And so we had a burial at sea, which was kind of a sobering experience, but I never had any close friends that were ever killed.
As that war in the Pacific went on, the later it got, the more the Japanese started to employ those kamikaze attacks. I'm guessing that somewhere along the line, especially by Okinawa, that you saw some of that firsthand. What do you remember?
Well, I can remember specifically the one that made the dive on our ship and missed.
This was at Okinawa?
This was on Okinawa, in Buckner Bay, they called it. It originally was called Nakakasuko-wan, but they renamed it Buckner Bay. We were anchored there for 3 months after the landings. Because of our, I'll call it the versatility and the availability of the docking facilities, other ships couldn't do what we could do in repairing. And so we were there for 3 months. During that time, I'll always remember this. We'd been there for quite a while. And then a ship just came in the night before, brand new ship. You could tell by the paint. I mean, you can tell whether they're how long they've been out there or whether they're just from the States. They came in, anchored there in the same bay there that we were. The kamikazes, they could attack at any time, but oftentimes it was right at daylight, right at that they would make an attack. This ship came in, anchored there. The very next morning, a kamikaze came in and hit the bridge. And it just, I don't know how many people were actually killed or injured or anything, but I thought, boy, we've been here for several months, and we didn't have, and we did have one that came after us, but the rest of the time, but this, we'd been there all this time, and he had just come in from the night before. My thinking was that they must have thought this is a pretty tough situation.
Tell me about the one that came at your ship. Why did it miss? Did you guys shoot it down?
Yes. Whether or not we deserved it or whether anybody else deserved it, it'd be interesting to know how many people deserved or took credit for shooting down a plane and which one really did it. Who knows? However, I know one thing, that we had all kinds of friendly fire that was more hazardous. I mean, he missed. Maybe we hit him. I don't know. But he just went over the top of the ship and went into the water. Just didn't hit the ship. I mean, there were just all kinds of holes that we had, not from the kamikaze,
but from other ships. And where were you when that kamikaze came over?
Well, that's my battle station, which is aft on the dual 40-millimeter mount on the aft.
So you saw him coming in?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What do you think would have happened had he hit the ship?
Who knows? I don't know whether he had what kind of bombs he had on him or not. My guess is maybe he didn't, because he came in from, seemed to be, have come in from a land-based situation right there on the island. So I don't know what damage. It all depends upon where they hit. I mean, sometimes it's not so bad. Sometimes it's disastrous. I mean, if he happened to hit a magazine or something like that, and that's curtains. But we didn't suffer any damage from the kamikaze. He's coming in at just at, I'll call it, ship level. And so somebody's over here firing. I mean, who's going to control it? I mean, everybody's thinks they're going to shoot it down. Well, they don't worry about where those shells are going to end up.
That's right. They don't plan on missing. I know we're almost out of time here, and I know there's a million more stories you probably have, but you've probably been asked this one before. When you look back on all the time you spent in the war and all those landings, what would you say was your closest call, the closest you came to not being here talking to me right now?
Yeah. I also had one other opportunity. I was the officer of the deck later on in the war. These are things that you say, can you picture? Two high-altitude bombers flew over and dropped bombs on us. Two on the starboard side and two on the port side. I don't know whether how big those bombs were, but whatever they were, it would, if had they any of them hit a ship of our type, well, it would have potentially could have been curtains. But that's the only other experience I had that was close. You haven't asked me what we thought of General MacArthur.
Let me guess. Dugout Doug?
He got it.
So you weren't necessarily a fan of the corncob pipe?
Not really. And we got shuffled off into the 7th Fleet. I mean, we wanted to be in the 5th Fleet with Nimitz, but then they also had the 7th Fleet, which was MacArthur's Navy. And he was coming up from New Guinea on his way back to the Philippines in his return. Anyway, we made the landings on Leyte. That was the next landing that we made. It was the most peaceful beach that you can ever, ever imagine. Big strand out there. Sand, all of, we had been used to coral and rocks and reefs. It wasn't very long thereafter till, and it was virtually unopposed. Right. the landing, some lady itself. But what comes up next is shows this picture of MacArthur going in with up to his, he didn't have to get his feet wet. He had to back off, stage it all, and he was I call it a real glory seeker. Now, he was revered by all of the Filipinos, of course, and then the Japanese later on. He was revered, but Harry Truman didn't like him. But anyway.
But it rubbed you the wrong way because your responsibility was getting people ashore there. You knew that he didn't have to get his feet wet, so that was just a photo op.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's not very nice. I should think of.
I can understand why you would feel that way at the time. I do want to ask you before we run out of time. When you have a situation like the one that Citation describes at Saipan, or where the bombs fall on one side of your ship and not the other, and here you are hoping you're going to get back and see your wife and that son you've never met before. When all those things happen, do you feel like somebody was looking out for you?
No, I didn't. I really didn't. And I there's something wrong with me, but it should. I think I ought to be smarter than I really am. I mean, I ought to be able to recognize that something or somebody is taking care of me.
How do you feel about it now?
I still have a tough time. Yeah. It's one of the things that's of my life that is very difficult for me to realize that there's something other than things of my own doing. I mean, I think I'm in charge, and I know I think I know I'm not.
I like the way you put that. Well, when you think back on all of it, because you had quite a few experiences in World War II. That's a long time in the Navy. 5 landings is a lot of landings to be involved in. When you look back on it all, what are you most proud of and what are you most thankful for?
I really didn't think that I was doing anything particularly different than many, many other people did. But the thing that I'm the proudest of was the fact that we won the war. Tough as it is, I was wholeheartedly in favor. When I found out about it, Harry Truman had decided to drop the atom bomb. What did really concern me, and we were on our way, we came back after having been there 3 months in Okinawa, and we were on our way back, and we were in, believe it or not, in San Francisco when they dropped the atom bomb. So it meant that we got out. The release system worked beautifully for me. Some of those other guys have been out there for months and maybe years, plenty of points to get back. But if you're out there in one of those islands, the system doesn't work very well. I was very fortunate in that respect.
Would you have been heading back to land more troops or tanks if he hadn't dropped the bombs? You would have been going to Japan?
Absolutely. That was our understanding, that we were coming back and going to land on Kyushu. I'll tell you, but that would have been a very, very tough and questionable thing, whether we can, true, we've been handling at a great distance and keeping a lot of men going over there, but we did not have the homeland of Japan to fight. They were rabid. And we would be ourselves if somebody were to invade us, but maybe not to the quite to the degree that the Japanese were.
Well, and I've seen, you know, the official government estimates that were prepared that invasion would have cost 1 million American lives. Is it your opinion that by President Truman giving authorization to drop those bombs that maybe he saved your life?
Sure. It's everybody's. I mean, the potential. Yeah. No, I was give 'em hell, Harry. And so that's what came about.
I think you've got some children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren who are thankful that it worked out that way, because otherwise they might not be here. I know we're out of time, but I want to thank you for serving our country and thank you for telling us these stories. Is there anything else you think we really ought to know?
I mentioned, I think, a little earlier that it was our finest hour, tough as it was. That, to me, is one of the greatest things about this United States of America that we have. that we can, it's too bad in a way that it takes something as severe as a wartime condition to bring us together. No, I said it's an experience that I would not have asked for, yet having gone through it and survived it, I've been grateful for all of that. I think it's been an added dimension to my life.
Well, and your story has certainly added to our understanding today. Thank you, Mr. Wine. That's Glenn Wine, 92 years old, of Atwater, California. We're out of time on Hometown Heroes today. Please join us again next time for more stories from our greatest generation. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you that freedom is not free.